Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Paranormal Science.
And welcome, everybody. My name is Mark Kies, and I'm here with my good buddy,
Stan Zirk.
And you're listening to Paranormal Science on WILK. And we have some interesting news that has been recently going around Facebook.
And what would that be?
The
building for sale?
Building house, for
house
sale.
House for sale. A house
yes.
for sale.
And Stan, what house is that?
Well, it's located in New Jersey. It was famous for a movie. And it comes from a little town called Amityville.
Yes, and would that be the Amityville Horror House?
Yes, it would. It's up for sale again.
Yeah, I see it back on Facebook. It's gone through several owners. Back in, wow, this is going back a couple of years now. I think it was 2011, maybe. We had Mr. Lutz on there. He actually goes by a different name as well. And he was the young son who lived in the home at the time. Of the activity which the story was filmed about.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave a little bit different account. Of course, you know, as TV and movies go, everything is dramatized.
Right.
But he's, you know, out there trying to get his version of what happened there. And he said, of course, it was Hollywoodized, if you will.
Well, they have to. They have to beef it up a little bit and make it interesting.
Yeah, they do. You know, I think they talked about, it's been a really long time since I've actually seen the movie, but I think there's blood coming from the walls and stuff like that. He mm-hmm. said that wasn't necessarily true, but a lot of the content was, but not all of it.
Hmm.
But yeah, I haven't heard anything about any activity there, but the house is back on the market, and I think just because of its history, it tends to make news when that happens.
It's only $850,000 for the home.
Is that all?
Yeah, it's a 5,000 square foot, five bedroom, 3.5 bath, 1927 Dutch colonial.
I gotta say, I saw the picture recently of what it looks like, and it is a beautiful home.
It still looks the same. I mean, if you look at it, it's still got the windows, the gables on the side, I guess you would call them. Yeah, it looks the same.
And people like that history. I don't know if I'd want to live in a home that has had murders in it, especially the five people were killed in the home.
Is it a home? Is it that exact home that all this happened in? Is it, or is that a home they used to base the movie on?
I don't know if they. I don't think they filmed in the home. I could be wrong, but that's where it happened, and the movie was based on it. But there's also, interestingly enough, a lawsuit going on right now from the original owners of the home The Conjuring was filmed at. I guess they're having all kinds of issues now with trespassers coming to see the original home. And I believe it was Warner Brothers. I could be wrong on that. I think Warner Brothers may have been company that had filmed, but there's a lawsuit that's been reported in the news lately.
I got a little history on the house. What happened there? 1974, then 23-year-old Ronald Defoe Jr. killed his parents, two younger brothers, and two younger sisters in the house, shooting them a rifle as they slept. Defoe is now serving 25 years to life at Greenhaven Correctional Facility in Dutchess County. The Lutz family, that's who we had on a few years ago?
Yeah, I think it was 2011.
Yeah. Moved in the house later. They left the house in 1976, later providing audio tapes to author Jane Anson, describing paranormal experiences, that became the basis of the book, The Amityville Horror True Story. So it was that house.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, you know, I'm trying to find out if there's still activity in it.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything, even from the family, that there was any kind of activity still going on there, but quite the historical place. Like I said, I don't know, it's a little creepy to me, even if it was cleaned of any negative residue. I don't think that I'd want to just be in that house known for, a brutal massacre.
Well, the people that had owned it died last year. They just bought it in 2010, and they just died last year. Doesn't say how they died or what happened. It was a husband and wife.
There's, probably some negative karma still remaining there.
With all the tragedy, I'm sure there's something there.
Yeah. It's interesting. You see a lot now popping up in different articles, not necessarily on, real estate sites, but a lot of people are promoting houses for sale that have hauntings there, and people are really kind of into that. You know, it's not everybody's, bag of ghosts, but some people really like that and would buy a house just because of the haunting.
I believe there was two in the area. One was up in Dunmore.
Mm-hmm.
That was about a year or two ago. Someone was selling a house, and they actually listed as a haunted house.
Yes.
Noise, bumps in the night, 3 o'clock, screaming, stuff like that.
Yep, and Wilkes-Barre, was that another one?
Wilkes-Barre had one. I can't remember the name of it. Is it the Wells House, or is that a separate, some other issue? The Wells House is one of the most haunted houses in Wilkes-Barre, but I don't know if that's the one that's for sale.
I'm not sure myself. But I don't know. I got to say, I can go out and investigate just about anywhere, and I'm okay with that, and there's not really much that bothers me, but I don't know if I'd want to live necessarily in a haunted house. I'd always feel like I was being watched at intimate times, we'll say. I'd rather know that I'm alone.
Yes. I always say that, 99% of the times we're out there, I've never come across anything evil, anything bad, luckily. It's always some spirit that wants to find its way, wants to be let known that it's there, what happened, or the help cross over.
Right.
But I would have a terrible fear in something like the Amityville, though. For some reason, I wouldn't consider that a friendly spirit in that house.
Yeah, and more so, what was there even before the massacre? Was there something that was there that may have even played a part in in what happened there? And a lot of what we find, if we go into homes where, let's say, a suicide occurred and they had a haunting there, and you had somebody who had, let's say, a bipolar issue, a lot of anger issues and maybe alcoholism, and was just a volatile person, someone who's sensitive to that moving into the house can start taking on those type of feelings and get agitated really quick. And
right.
And, often until we get out there and start looking into it, the cause really isn't that, in your face, and people might completely have a different idea of what they think's going on there. And, it could be something like that. Exactly like that.
I'm trying to think of the name of the movie. It's an older one, and I haven't seen it in years. And I remember the word Red Rum. They're in a mountain somewhere. The guy actually went crazy from the spirits up there, tried to kill his wife, his kids.
Yes, Jack Nicklaus.
Jack Nicklaus. What was the name of that movie?
Boy. You put me on the spot there. I don't know that.
That's an example of something taking over and scaring somebody and that happening to them.
Yes, The Shining.
The Shining.
Yeah, that was The Shining. Thank you, our Chief Engineer Bosco jumping in there. I appreciate that. I don't know. Again, people like to buy these places, but I I do enjoy going out there and working on these type of cases. I like providing relief for people. Nothing really bothers me. We've run into some stuff that I could say was probably evil, but I don't want anything in my house.
Yeah, true. You want to go visit at someone else's house. You don't want to have it home with you.
So if you want a place like that, I don't know if there's anything going on currently, but you could check out the Amityville Horror House.
It's up for sale. $150,000.
Yeah, sounds like a deal.
Yeah, hey, if that's the kind of home you like.
But hey, we got our buddy Bob from Wilkes-Barre is calling in to talk about the Amityville house, and he's got quite of a bit of knowledge, a good base of information.
He's a good man.
Bob, how are you doing tonight?
Welcome, Bob.
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. So you want to talk a little bit about the Amityville house?
Yes. Back in the 1980s, there was a fellow named Steve Kaplan who was debunking it. He was saying that it was all a hoax. And so I got in touch with the Warrens and had them record a statement of their experiences there. And they insisted that it was all real. Ed Warren said that he was in the basement and he challenged anything that was there and was confronted by a demonic spirit and so forth and so on. So they were totally on board with it being haunted. And then in about 2003, a friend of mine and I went to Penn State for what they called their first Paracon, and this was, you know, about 2003, and they had George Lutz there presenting his side of the story, and it was interesting because during the presentation, while he was speaking, there were disembodied voices in the room. Not lots of them, but there was some giggling and shouting and stuff that just didn't fit anywhere, and we were all kind of impressed, I have to say. But his story, now he always was upset that Hollywood had taken liberties with it, but then when I asked him to say what did happen that night, it sounded just like what you saw in the movies. So, anyway, for my two cents, it's definitely legitimate, and you hear a lot of people saying, oh, no, it isn't, but no, it was. It was the real thing.
You know, and I would
and
have
by
to...
the way,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, one more thing. It's not in New Jersey, it's in New York.
Yes, Amityville is in New York, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So,
you know, I just want to say I agree with you there. And we had Christopher Lutz, who goes by Christopher Quarantino. He was a stepson. But he lived in the house, and he's got his own version, and he's out talking about it now. And, you know, he said there was definitely a haunting there, no doubt, but that his stepdad actually, he believed, was a cause of a lot of the type of activity. And, you know, his story differs a little bit than his dad's. And, you know, Hollywood definitely puts their own spin on it, and he said that there was a lot added to the film that just didn't happen, but it was put in there, you know, just for entertainment value or a scare factor. But, you know, when you break it down, you know, this is going back years ago when people really did not talk about this, and there was probably a lot of hauntings going on, but it was very rare that somebody would come out in public and speak about it. So a lot of these cases seemed like really big deals back then and were made for movies, but when you compare them with a lot of modern day hauntings that we have right now, I mean, there's, you know, 100 cases I could throw out that would be worthy of a television movie. But I think a large part of it was just because, you know, people really didn't talk about it back then. It was unique, and you know, it can be sensationalized. So, you know, I agree. I think they probably had some stuff going on there, and just by all the witnesses and even the son coming out saying, you know, there was a haunting there. It was what they felt was a negative haunting, but not as extreme as the movie made.
Well, for some reason, I won't belabor the point, but for example, you know, Georgia was saying that Hollywood went to town with the blood on the walls, but then at the same time, he said that the room was full of flies upstairs, you know, so... You know, you saw enough of, you know, they showed enough in the movie that was real that whatever they added didn't ruin it too much.
Right. And, you know, it definitely had a negative impact on the whole entire family. I think that's something everybody agreed about, and they did feel it was a negative haunting as compared to some of the nicer hauntings that you run into from time to time.
Bob, did you, what you know about the home, did you know of anything that happened prior to the murders there? Was there a history with this home? Do you know?
The usual stories of that it was sacred ground of the Indians and there might be somebody buried there and on, but I'm not really familiar with Amityville too much in terms of that. I just know the DeFeo history and then the Lutzes. And you know, it's who knows?
Well,
you know, there's I just wanted to set the, because there is so much, you know, propaganda or whatever you want to call it, that it was all fake, and no, it wasn't. And I just want to put in my two cents there.
Well,
having
we appreciate
spoken
that.
To the.
Yes.
Okay, you're cutting out. I'm sorry. I don't know if you're hearing me, but
yep, we're hearing you just fine, Bob. That I appreciate the phone call. You have a great night.
Thanks, Bob.
Okay, same to you. Yep.
You know, we had the same situation here in
West Pittston?
West Pittston, yes. Mm-hmm. You know, a home very heavily haunted there, and a lot of people didn't believe it was going on there either, and it was just sensationalized for either a movie or a book later
right.
on. And in fact, the Warrens came out to that one as well.
Yes, they did. We just had one of the daughters on a few weeks ago.
Yeah, and you know, again, once television or the movies take over and the production companies at work, you know, you're getting the dramatization. And I actually talked to some producers from television about, you know, some of the television shows that they produce. And they said that they don't necessarily do it to just to scare people for the sake of scaring them, but they're trying to recreate what the people were feeling at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way to do that is by adding special effects and the scary, creepy music.
I was just going to say, if you took away the music in that, it would just be nothing with these movies. The music makes it like the dun, dun, dun.
Right.
It's building up and you know something's going to happen. And
well, the funny thing is, when we first started filming with The Haunted, we went out and we did our investigations, and we didn't have a production crew with us for the actual investigation. They took a lot of our video footage and used it into the footage that they came out and later filmed. And while we're there, there's no music, there's no special effects. It's very quiet,
mm-hmm.
you know, quite often. And
right.
I remember watching as it developed, and then the final cut when it, you know, was aired on TV, and you know they have the scenes coming out of the house and the creepy music and the special effects, and I'm saying, wow, that's a scary place. I don't know if I'd want to go there. But yeah. It's not quite like that in real life when you're actually there. But anyway, we have to take a short commercial break. So when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about our trip down to the Pennhurst Paracon this weekend. So stick with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Mark Hayes from Paranormal Science. Did you ever get that feeling like you have a thousand demons tearing at your back? You know the pain. Are you uncomfortable in your own body, like you're possessed with somebody else's torment and suffering? You don't need an exorcist. You need chiropractics. Dedicated to providing the best chiropractic and rehabilitative care possible, Chiropractics will get you back into the body you remember. Chiropractics, 569 Pier Street, Kingston, PA. Check them out on the web, getchiropractics.com, T-I-X on the end, or call 570-288-5800 and get back to living.
Warning. This program may contain material that is controversial to some listeners. Spontaneous enlightenment may occur.
Welcome back. You're listening to Paranormal Science on WILK. Our call-in numbers are 570-883-0098 from anywhere, toll-free in PA, 1-800-437-0098. Give us a call. We'd like to hear if anybody's ever been out on any kind of tour, or maybe stayed at a bed and breakfast, or were at some kind of restaurant and you had what you believe was a ghost sighting there.
Some type of activity.
Yeah, we'd like to hear about it. We want to know where you were and what you saw. So give us a call. Again, from anywhere, 570-883-0098. Well, this past weekend, the Pennhurst Paracon 2 took place, and that was hosted by, I believe, the Ghost Hunters Store, which is in New Jersey, and Ghost Detectives, a local mm-hmm. Television show, and they invited us to come down there, and I got to tell you, we had a really, really good time. Pennhurst is a rather large
It's area. Very large. Unfortunately, I could not make it this year. I was there last year, so I know the size of the place.
We definitely missed you down there, but you know, we made a lot of new friends and met a lot of friends that we hadn't seen in a long time, so it was really nice to touch base with everybody, and they had several speakers down there that really gave some really good lectures. Rosalind Brown from Ghost Hunters Academy 2 gave a great lecture on things that people perceive as hauntings, but weren't really a true haunting, and there were just some symptoms. I don't know what you want to call them, but just some ways people perceive stuff as hauntings. And she's actually going to be coming on our show in in next couple weeks. And a man by the name of Matt Haas, he's a good friend of the PPA. Matt runs a paranormal team out in Long Island. And Matt spoke a lot about dangers of the paranormal, and he knows firsthand. He actually was doing an investigation and got an attachment to him. And we had Virginia go in there and help rid him of that. And just a great guy. It was a good lecture. But he also talks about other dangers that you wouldn't necessarily think of, but lawsuits, for example, and was discussing several pending lawsuits that are out there right now against paranormal teams. And, you know, people can sue for just about anything. But, you know, when you deal with this stuff, there's all kinds of emotional things that go on, sometimes physical things. And, you know, you could be sued for emotional trauma, or if, you know, your equipment were to damage something, you could be sued. So there's just such a variety of things, and people really have to be careful with what they're doing and how they interact with clients. So it was a really interesting lecture that he gave. And a man by the name of John Tobin, who he's from the Glory Haunt Hounds, and they do more of a historical haunting type of lectures. And our good friend Chris DeCesare, who's been on the show several times. Chris was the victim of a haunting out at the SUNY Geneseo campus, and survived that. And he talks with a lot of people about what it was like to go through a malevolent haunting and to be injured. And I like his lecture because the theme is what we talk about a lot. His initial impressions of the haunting were not exactly what he thought it was. It was something entirely different at the end. You know, he was getting physically attacked, but it came down to what he believes was a man who was hung and, you know, died at the hands of other people, and was reaching out for help.
That seems like that's what most of them are.
So yeah.
It may start off as something you'd be afraid of, and by the end, you feel sorry for them.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I tell people this, too. When they're getting, like, what they feel is attacked, like scratches, let's say, they feel it's being attacked. And, you know, we often say, you got to look at the intent of it, though. Is that the only way that the spirit knows how to reach out to connect with somebody, to let them know they're there? And can a spirit even control the amount of force being used when they're touching somebody? And interesting, jumping back to Rosalind Brown, she spoke about, it's got a long medical name, but it's essentially a histamine dump that you can get under your skin. And a lot of people report scratches or even things that look like symbols or words on, say, your back, your arms. But if you have this histamine dump, it's kind of weird. It would be like from an allergic reaction, except without the allergic reaction part. But you get this histamine dump under your skin, and you can actually draw figures on it. You can draw lines, and it will welt just like you were scratched.
No, I mean, is this something that the people draw on themselves, or is it just scratches that come out from this?
Well, usually you have this dump and you might get a red spot there, but if you rub it, you can get a scratch looking mark. Or say you're laying in bed and it feels like a hot area and you're sleeping and you happen to scratch it with your hand, you could wake up looking like you have these welts on your arm. You know, so I'm not saying this is every case that this histamine dump would cause this stuff, but
it's just one explanation for
something to consider when things like that happen. So it was a great lecture by Robin. But we have another Robert calling in tonight from German, and he used to go ghost hunting. Hi there, Robert. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how you guys doing? I'm a new caller, too, by the way.
Well, it's great to have you calling in.
Yeah, you guys are welcome. I used to go ghost hunting back in 2010 and 2011 up at the Silent. There used to be a hospital up there off of Kaiser Avenue over on Westside.
Right, in Ransom Township area, I believe, or Newton Township, whatever that is there.
Yeah, on top of the hill there, and I guess it caught on fire back in your,
Yeah, many fires there.
Yeah, and so I went up there, and I had my camera going, and my one friend and this the girl that her friend, we were up there, and I was just videotaping, looking around, because I would watch YouTube clips about it, and I never really went up there. So I was like, all right, let's go up there. So we didn't see nothing, but the camera, when I brought it back to my friend's house and hooked it up to the laptop, I saw this kind of like a shadow alien kind of thing. It kind of like transformed. I had to like play the video back like 3 times just to see, and it transformed into like a little girl, it seemed like.
Wow.
It came like to like a creature, like a dark shadow figure. So everybody, I posted on Facebook, and everybody's like, oh, that's just, you know, nothing. It's just, you know, it just doesn't look nothing. But me and my friend were like, no, that's, you know, really bizarre, because we didn't see nothing. But it was like this dark figure that's shaped into like smoke, kind of, I guess you want to call it. I put that on YouTube, and then what I did is I went back up there by myself, because I wanted to go up there and see if I had the courage to go up there and walk through it. And my friend was like, oh, I'm just going to sit down here and wait for you. So I walked through it, and I was getting video, and then I heard really lightly in the corner of my ear, and I don't know if my mind was playing tricks on me or whatever, but I heard, get out. Like, that's what I heard in my ear. And then all of a sudden, a deer jumped out of nowhere and scared me.
Worse.
Yeah. So it scared me. So I was like, so when I heard that voice, was that my imagination, or you think there was something like warning me, or just?
Well, I tell you, it could be both, but you know, you're not alone there in the pictures. I could tell you that there's a lot of people over the years have gone up there, some ghost hunters, some just, you know, enthusiasts or people who just like historical places, and they've caught all kinds of weird looking shadow type and even like mist type figures on cameras. You know, it may make sense that you heard something like that. You know, it could be something. I know that, you know, it wasn't the most pleasant place to be, I guess. I don't remember the whole history of the place. I think it was a tuberculosis hospital at one point. There were a lot of deaths there. And
yeah, I know. And my other one is that one, you guys were talking about the West Pits. And when I used to walk past that all the time, that house up there in West Pits. And my girlfriend lived in Exeter at the time. And I used to walk past that house all the time up there.
Yeah, and that was a tough thing for the family to go through. I actually went to high school with the daughters who were, I believe, a grade or head, grade or two ahead of me, and it was a tough thing for them to go through publicly. And you know, like today, if somebody said my house is haunted, you know, people are going to be like, oh yeah, right, or you're going to get well, that's cool. You know, you'll mm-hmm. get one version or other, but people aren't really going to chastise you for saying that or for calling in help. But you know, you go back 10, 15, 20 years ago, you know, people really scrutinized you for even saying something like that.
Yeah,
there's been, you know, a lot of reports up on the mountain there where you were, and you know, a lot of weird things. A lot of people say they not necessarily going ghost hunting, but there's a lot of historical people that they like old historical places, abandoned buildings and stuff like that, who will go in to take pictures, and they'll say they'll have like 2 or 3 people there who all have camera problems. Either the pictures aren't coming out, the cameras are turning off, the batteries are going dead.
That's common, right?
Yeah, and then there was a picture of a guy in the window that you can see clear as day in the picture, and everybody couldn't deny that.
Yeah, there's
you could see the guy looking out the window, and there was nobody in there.
You know, and it's hit and miss. If you got some pictures there, you were there on a lucky day. And even some of the cases we've done back-to-back Friday, Saturday nights, we've had, you know, lots of activity on Friday, and you're expecting the same Saturday. You go back, and you get absolutely nothing. And so those people who are lucky enough to capture stuff in photos, it's, you know, it's a keeper because they're tough to get.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yeah.
They are.
But I appreciate the call. Thanks for calling in, Robert, and thanks for listening to the show.
Thanks, Robert.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, guys.
So one thing you know, I would like to add is that that is private property up there for people thinking of going up there. A lot of people do get permission. I'm not sure who you'd even go to at this point.
Is the building still there, or did they tear it down?
You know, I believe there's just remains of maybe 1 or 2 buildings. Most of the buildings are gone.
It seems like a lot of these old asylums, I don't like to use the word insane asylums, but that's what they were called.
Yes.
The asylums or tuberculosis hospitals, they seem to be quite active. I guess because of the nature of what they were,
Right.
And the spirits may very well be just as confused as when they're alive.
Now, according to most of the mediums we work with, if someone dies in a home like that, they're not necessarily in the right mind all the time. And they think of that as home if they've been there long enough, and they might pass away and just stay there for whatever their emotional or psychological state is at the time. And they get stuck. One interesting thing I found, speaking with several mediums who have worked with us going into, old state homes or even some tuberculosis hospitals, is that the staff will actually stay with them when they die. And I thought that to be, number one, I guess, extraordinarily compassionate. Virginia, who's been out with us to a local old insane asylum, felt that there were several former employees of the place who used to be like nurses that would take care of the people, stayed. And it wasn't like they crossed over and went to, in quotes, heaven, if you will, and came back. They decided to stay with the patients and take care of them.
I'd imagine when you're for years taking care of the people, they're part of your family. They're somebody you really love, care for, just you're attached.
You know, and I could say I've had the opportunity to go to the Clark Summit State Hospital on occasion, and boy, what a tremendously sad place to see, because some people really have some psychological issues, and some of them are even catatonic, and you could go there and just see them sitting or standing and they're not moving. They're just sort of staring into space.
Right.
And I don't know. I just I found it overwhelmingly sad to be there. It's not a happy place by any extent.
No, it's not. I mean, I have all the respect in the world for the people that work in those places. I personally couldn't do it. I couldn't handle day in, day out, living with that. That's not something in me.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm just not compassionate enough or not, but it's just something I don't think I can do.
It takes a special person,
yes,
I'll say
does.
That.
Yes, it does.
It's like being a teacher, even. That's a special kind of person right there, too. Mm-hmm. That's a tough job. But jumping back to Pennhurst, that used to be a state school, and I had the opportunity to be able to speak with some of the people who lived around there. And the neat part is a lot of the people who work there still live there, and they're still alive. And before it even closed down, they had a lot of stories of hauntings and paranormal activity that went on. And people who go there claim that it's a really, really active place, and the disposition of the building. Well, there's several buildings, but the building that we were in, people claim the disposition of that building changes greatly at night. And, Robert was just saying, is some of it in your mind or is some of it real? It's probably a mixture of both. But it's, just by the look of it, it is priming somebody for experiences, I guess, if you will, whether it's psychological or real.
The history of that place, I don't know how much who you talk to down there, because you get two different stories. If you talk to the workers, which there was a few of them down there, they had their own little setup, people, the aides that worked there. They'll tell you one story. There's family members there of the people and the neighboring residents. They'll tell you a whole other story of what was going on in there. And, I mean, there was some nasty, nasty things.
Going on as far as real-life events.
Real-life
yes.
events. Like, they use the example that, if Bobby really misbehaved, they took him to the movies.
Right, and Bobby never came back.
Never came back.
Right.
Yeah, they took him, and there's tunnels under there. And they took him down in the tunnels, and that was it. He's gone.
Yeah, a few of the people that we spoke to actually did talk about the tunnels underneath and found them extraordinarily eerie. Nobody that I spoke to had any experiences in them, but felt that it was a very negative place.
It wasn't a happy place if they led you through there.
Yeah. Well, we're going to continue our conversation with the Pennhurst Paracon 2 and who we talked to down there. When we come back, we have to take another short commercial break. You're listening to Paranormal Science on WILK. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Paranormal Science on WILK. Give us a phone call from anywhere, 570-883-0098, toll-free in Pennsylvania, 1-800-437-0098, or you could text us at 99404. Well, we're talking about paranormal experiences in Pennhurst and the Paracon down there, and we have a little bit of something coming up with the East Coast Paracon.
Yes, we do. We got a couple of things coming up. You're going to have to listen for more information on this one, but we have a bingo coming up. I believe it's mid-July. I don't have the exact date in front of me. It is for a benefit for a young girl with an illness, and we are just helping them out down there. And it will be in Wilkes-Barre Township Fire Department. And again, the ladies are handling this, and it's something I believe they call a purse bingo. I'm not sure what that means, but if one of the girls wants to call in and they could explain it, hey.
Is this for Miss Lila?
Miss Lila.
Yes.
Lollies Lila's, yeah.
Right.
Lollies? Lila's Lollies.
Lila's Lollies, yes. If people are familiar with that, yes, I actually gave a donation with some of the funds that I was able to raise through my book sale at the convention this weekend. And, you know, I'd like to throw a thank you out for Ghost Detectives and Bob Christopher for having us come down there. And like I said, it was a really good time. Met a lot of nice people. And something that I got to tell you I wasn't prepared for was that there were some enthusiasts there who watch a lot of paranormal television, including The Haunted.
Mm-hmm.
And I had several people calling my name, running at me, that I was not expecting them to know so much. But and these were super nice people. You know, it was great to meet them. You know, they were, you know, telling me that, you know, they were so excited to be able to meet me. But, I mean, the honor was mine that, you know, these people would, you know, recognize that I was going to be there and actually come out and want to speak to me kind of blew my mind. But I wasn't really prepared for that. But, you know, if anybody is listening to the show who was there and came and talked to me, thank you. I really appreciate that. It meant a lot. And, you know, we just had such a great time talking to everybody and sharing stories.
It's fun at those conventions. It's a great time.
Yeah, and, you know, and I was somebody who never was really into the conventions, and I mean, we just do so much work at the PPA. It takes up a lot of time, and that's where my heart is going out and getting to the bottom of hauntings for people and trying to solve those. But it's really nice to get out and talk to a lot of people.
I was just going
to
say, it's like, it's different. It's a nice break. It's something different to go out and talk and listen to other people and learn what they're doing and what's going on out there.
Yeah, and there's you know, so much great information that I gain from that. And you know, it's really great. And you know, another very exciting thing that happened to me over the weekend here, a psychic medium by the name of William, who takes cases for us out. He's one of our associate psychics out of the Hershey area, but he covers like all around Harrisburg for us when we have cases come in. He'll go out and handle a lot of those for us, William Stillman. And he wrote a book, and I posted a nice little thing on our Facebook page that I wasn't expecting this to happen, but he actually put a nice little I don't know what you really call it. I wrote up a nice little piece for him, which he had several people do, but he put mine on the back of his book with my name there and sent me the copy of the book. And we're gonna start referring clients to that, I guess. It's going to be a resource for some of our clients to read through it. It gives a great explanation of how psychic mediums work and how they get information. And it also explains how different ghosts and negative entities will try to communicate with you, what to do if, you know, you come into contact with them and then you have a problem. And it's really great. It's called Under Spiritual Siege, and it's by William Stillman. And it's how ghosts and demons affect us and how to combat them. So it's really worth checking out. And, you know.
And where can you get this book at?
I believe you could get it anywhere books are sold. Amazon.
Is it local bookstores? Like, you can get it in there?
I'm not sure about local bookstores. You can ask for it. But, you know, online, Barnes & Noble's and Amazon. You could Google it, but we're going to have William on the show as well in a couple weeks, and he's going to come in and talk all about the book. And it goes, like I said, right through spiritual issues, you know, how psychics receive info and communicate, and it gives a real good explanation of that, because a lot of people don't understand how they get info, and, you know, they think they have just this vast amount of knowledge that comes in because they're psychic. They get a little bit, but, you know, it's typically transferred in a way of a life experience that they've had, and they get symbols.
Their interpretation.
Yeah, right. They have to interpret what they're seeing in their head, and, you know, it's not like they can get unlimited information. Mm-hmm. So it's very limited to their frame of reference. So he walks a person all through that to, you know, ghosts and demons and spirit guides and, you know, how to deal with them and how to help heal yourself and others from hauntings and other spiritual related issues. So it's really a great book. I read it, and again, it's something that I want to bring him in and to talk about, and it's going to be a resource for our team, for people who are going through hauntings, that they can read it for themselves and know what to do before we come, why we're there, and even after. It's a great follow-up book. And we have you know, another Bob, third Bob for the night.
Three in a row.
On standby here from Berwick. Hi, Bob. Welcome to the show.
How's it going?
It's going good. So, you have a ghost story to tell. Have you had a sighting in the past?
I do. Basically, what happened, a real quick back, my mother-in-law had Alzheimer's and was in a wheelchair. We moved in with her to take care of her. And my wife and her, you know, her daughter did not get along at all in life. They just butted heads constantly. In all fairness to my wife, never denied her mother anything. Doctors, medication, food. She was not mistreated in any way. They just didn't get along with each other. After she had passed, about a week later, I woke up in the middle of the night and I saw a shadow figure standing in my door. And I remember rolling over saying, who's there? Because I thought maybe my daughter had gotten up. And then it just vanished, and that was it. And then I rolled over, okay, it's probably Dorothy, that's my mother-in-law, and I went back to sleep. About a week later, my wife was having a horrible nightmare, and I woke up, and I rolled over to tell her, you know, to kind of comfort her, and I noticed that same shadow figure kind of leaning over her and holding her hand, and I just looked at her, and I pointed my finger right at it, and I said, back off, and it disappeared. You know, and the next morning my wife woke up and she had a mark on her hand and her hand burned really bad.
Oh, really?
You know?
And you know, that's one thing I didn't say before, and I had a question that if you were listening earlier to the show with like marks and maybe scrapes on the skin, there are some natural causes from that. But I wanted to ask during that lecture, and they just ran out of time, if people were reporting, you know, burning or pain with that type of scratch as compared to like a literal scratch that somebody would get on their skin. But yeah, that's kind of a scary thing there. So did you have any idea of what you think that was? Would that,
I think it was her mother basically getting even, you know, because the next time I was alone in the house, I yelled at her because she liked me. She trusted me, and I was her buddy, and she actually was always pleasant when she saw me in life. So I yelled at her. I said, that was a really crappy thing for you to do. I said, you know, you were never denied anything. I said, no matter what you think about her, she never mistreated you. Now back off. Never saw her again.
That was my next question, yeah. So no contact from then on.
No,
that works a lot of times.
Minor stuff. My daughter took over her bedroom. She says, I feel someone watching me. I said, it's just your grandmother. Tell her good night, and you love her, and go to sleep.
Well, interestingly enough, I'm rereading this book that I had just mentioned, and once people cross over properly, it sounds like if you're seeing, you know, if it was her mom or whatever, if you're seeing it in the form of a shadow, that might be somebody who didn't necessarily cross over yet. And you know, again, this I'm getting from the psychic mediums we work with, but, you know, it's not always instant for some people. Some people stick around for a couple days and go. Some people immediately. But in this book, William talks about how once people do cross over, there's you know, no more pain, suffering, revenge, any arguments that might have just happened, or like all is forgiven and it doesn't matter anymore. And a lot of people will try to, you know, come back on a higher level and make peace with that person. So, you know, hopefully that's the case. Hopefully, you know, she can work that out with, you know, her mom on a higher level.
Yeah, hopefully. Well, they have very strong personalities, both of them.
Yeah. And I could share a story similar, not quite exactly like that, but my mom used to tell me right after her dad died that she was actually seeing him sort of appear in this reclining chair that he used to sit in when he'd come to visit us, and he was scaring her. And you know, they got along, they didn't get along type of thing, but she wasn't comfortable with him being there anyway and kind of said the same thing, listen, you got to go, I don't want you here, and he never came back. So,
right.
You know, that that does happen, I believe, from time to time.
Yeah. Well, there hasn't been any activity since, so if she did cross over, it's been done, you know.
Oh, good. And hopefully she's looking at everything in a different light now.
Well, hopefully she went to a better place.
Yep. You know,
I'm a Christian. I believe in good and bad. So.
Same here. I'm with you.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you for the call,
appreciate
Bob.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
So, yeah, that's something we hear a lot, that right after somebody dies, the family might experience some kind of activity around the house or workplace even.
Yeah, they haven't fully crossed. They're a little confused. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hang around.
And again, this comes from the mediums we work with. I can't say it's right or wrong, but I've got no reason not to disbelieve them. They've been so accurate with information we can validate. You know, they say sometimes a person will die and go immediately into the light, and sometimes they want to stick around for a couple days, a couple months, years, and take care of some stuff, and then they go. And then there's those folks that want to stick around for a little bit and just get stuck here or don't know how to go after that. And, you know, they're the cases that we try to focus on and get them some relief and the family relief if they need that.
Some of the cases where the people are afraid to go.
Yes, you
know,
they
might consider themselves, what did I do in life? And, you know.
Right, due to their religious upbringing and their faith, they're told that you're going to be condemned and go to hell.
So
and
they're figuring, well, I'm just going to stay right here.
And I think almost 100% consistently, the psychic mediums, every single one that I've talked to on our team and off our team, will say that it's actually the person that's holding themselves back rather than any creator that they think is going to judge and condemn them somewhere. They have an opportunity to be forgiven. And, you know, some of the spiritual people say that maybe they need to go through a life review, and if they're willing to go back to the source and back to love, then, you know, they can stay. But a lot of people may not like that or want to do that and condemn themselves, or they can't forgive themselves.
Right.
And, you know,
they're stuck.
Yeah. So they decide, well, I'm going to just stay right here. It's safer here than to go anywhere else that I might be condemned. You know, I guess we'll all have the opportunity at some point to find out. Hopefully not for a while, but...
I hope not for a long while.
But, you know, I want to say, to Brian Cano, he was on the Haunted Collector, I believe it's called, just Haunted Collector. And every time I see him, what a truly nice guy he is.
He's a great guy.
But he has such a following. It's like he's got his own posse following him around everywhere he goes. Mm-hmm. He's got this little group of people that are, and it's always different, you know. And, you know, I saw him earlier in the day. And he's got this little group of people following him around. And later in the day, he's got another group following him around. But just what a genuinely nice guy. He's really great. He's extremely intelligent when it comes to the paranormal and investigating and the way he deals with things. And, you know, I like a lot of the things he does. He lectures all over the country.
Very hard to get a hold of him. We've been trying to get him for the Paracon, and we know the guy. We talked to him. Like I said, he's a very nice guy.
He is.
He's booked up so far in advance.
Yeah, and we were hoping to get him to come out for this one, but again, he was already booked up, and just a generally nice guy. So, you know, once again, a big thank you for inviting us down to the Pennhurst Paracon. We look forward to coming back to number 3 if you have it, but we're going to have a lot of those folks up at the East Coast Paracon here right in
September
in
24th.
Yep, so we look forward to that.
At the Marketplace in Steamtown. They changed the name.
Yes, it's going to be a big one.
Yes, it is.
All right, folks, that's it for us tonight. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Mark Kies.
And I'm Stan Zurich.
Have a great night.
And sleep tight.
Engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly! Parts.